Tuesday, you better have a flak jacket on and a helmet. I'm not kidding you. The acting Attorney General of the United States fired by President Trump. Former President Barack Obama breaks precedent and protocol by speaking out. The city of Lansing, Michigan, on track to become the next sanctuary city. I'm not kidding. Starbucks says it'd rather hire refugees than Americans. Also true. And the SCOTUS pick, well, the Supreme Court pick is going to happen tonight. On the program today, Frank Vernuccio, John Lott, Senator Patrick Kolbeck, Byron Henry, the director of the New York Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, because Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, says drunk driving is no big deal. And Boris Epstein, directly from the Trump White House here today. What a show it is. Strap it on. Tighten that helmet down. Get some coffee. Let's do it. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, there's so much to get to, we just cannot waste a moment here. Let's start with President Trump last night firing acting attorney general Sally Yates. Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, appointed by Barack Obama, said she would not enforce President Trump's executive order limiting refugees from 7 countries for just 120 days. She would not honor the 120-day temporary pause in immigration from refugees while we figure out our security so that we can make sure that America is safe. She got fired. Boom. Gone. She got the boot. You're fired. He has named Dana Bonte, U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, as acting attorney general in the interim. Sally Yates has been relieved of her obstructionist behavior. She's gone, as well she should be. Why is it wrong to protect America? Why is everybody so concerned about protecting America? I can tell you that it is the right thing to do. They know it. You know it. She didn't know it, but she might know it now. Meanwhile, former President Barack Obama has broken precedent and protocol in one stealth move, and this is what you're going to face for the next 4 years. Barack Obama coming out and criticizing openly in a statement Donald Trump's decisions as president. It's never happened, not in my lifetime. The soonest I can find anything, any comment from any previous president is several months later when Gerald Ford made a comment about Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter took almost 8 months to make any comments about Ronald Reagan. Don't know that Reagan ever made any comments about Bill Clinton, and the list goes on and on and on. You'd have to go back three generations to find a former president being critical of the new president in this way. It's just the way it is. Obama, who has remained silent for a whole 10 days, pledged before leaving office to only speak about Trump's policies where I think our core values may be at stake. This is your law, Mr. Obama. This is your law that you signed in 2015 on the 18th of December. Alluding to the widespread protests taking place in major airports and cities in response to the new immigration policy, Mr. Obama's spokesman says that Obama is heartened by the level of engagement taking place in community. He is encouraging the protests and the chaos. The most divisive president in American history is not done with his Saul Alinsky book yet, apparently. Apparently, he still wants to stir the pot. He wants to make as much trouble as is humanly possible. So he's speaking out 10 days after leaving office. You know why? because his feelings are hurt. Barack Obama's feelings are hurt because Hillary Clinton didn't get elected. Remember how he said he would take it personally if she wasn't elected? Well, guess what? He's taking it personally, and therefore he's now speaking out. Well, let me assure you, this is a new precedent and not a good one. It creates more chaos on the world stage. It creates more division here at home. It creates more problems everywhere. This is what's happening in your country. It's time to stand up. I've been on the BBC several times, twice again yesterday. And the Brits keep asking me, well, how do ordinary Americans feel? Let me tell you how ordinary Americans feel. They feel just fine about Donald Trump. This is who they voted for. This is what he said he was going to do. He is the president of the United States. His first action is making America safe. Then he'll work on the economy, and later today he'll pick a Supreme Court, a nominee to be a Supreme Court justice. He's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. What shocks everybody on the left is that he's doing it at a pace that they can't keep up with. He's doing it at a pace that they cannot keep up with. Meanwhile, I want you to pay attention to my next little bit here. For all of you folks that love stopping at Starbucks, you might want to rethink that. For all of you that want to stop at Starbucks today, you may want to rethink that idea. Starbucks has announced it now plans to hire 10,000 refugees in response to President Trump. They're making refugees the priority. They are making refugees the priority over 50,000 homeless veterans in America. 500,000 U.S. veterans are unemployed today. I've never heard Starbucks come out and say, hey, we need to hire veterans. 42 million people in America today don't have enough food to make it for the next 24 hours. 42 million. And Howard Schultz wants to make sure we need to hire these refugees. I've got an idea. Maybe we should put America first, just like the president says. You know how many of those 42 million are children? You know how many children of those 500,000 unemployed vets have little chance of going to school or going to college or having a good meal tonight? What about single women that are in shelters today, praying to survive, hoping to God they could have a job? And Howard Schultz of Starbucks wants to put his effort behind refugees coming here because Donald Trump had the nerve to put America first and say we need to make America safe for 120 days, a temporary pause. A temporary pause in the flow of refugees from countries that we can't get proper information from. And for this, Howard Schultz says he will focus his efforts on hiring refugees. Well, I will focus my efforts on never, ever going to Starbucks again. Am I crystal clear? Never. Coffee is not political. Leave it that way. If you make the coffee political, there's a problem. We'll discuss the politics. You make the coffee and leave it at that. It's 14 after. You'll need another cup, but don't you dare drink Starbucks listening to this program. I'm Steve Gruber. I'll be right back.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
All right, you buckled in because it only gets better from here, all right? It gets better from here. All right, Alex, I'm gonna grab that sound from the mayor of New York, Mayor Bill de Blasio. Mayor Bill de Blasio says that drunk driving is not a serious offense. And therefore, if you're an illegal alien in America and you get caught drunk driving, he's going to allow you to remain protected under the sanctuary city provisions of the city of New York. Yeah, Bill de Blasio doesn't think that drunk driving is too serious. In fact, if you don't believe me, take a listen. Here it is. Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York talking about drunk driving. Go.
Jake, there are 170 offenses in that law that are listed as serious and violent crimes that lead to automatic cooperation between the city of New York and our federal partners. So any serious and violent crime, we're going to work with them. Someone commits a minor offense. For example, right now, if you didn't have clear definitions like we have, let's say someone had a small amount of marijuana, let's say someone went through a stop sign, they could be deported for that, and their family could be torn apart. And you could have children left behind where the breadwinner in the family is sent back to a home country. That is not good for anyone. So we differentiate. Anyone who's a violent, anyone who's a serious threat to society, we agree. We'll work with the federal partners and they get deported. But we are not going to see with 500,000 undocumented people here. This would be true for 11 to 12 million undocumented folks in this country, the vast majority of whom are law abiding. We're not going to see families torn apart over a very minor offense.
But is grand larceny or drunk driving a very minor offense?
Drunk driving that does not lead to any other negative outcome, I could define as that.
So there you go. Drunk driving, a minor offense. Who in the audience here would beg to differ? Who in the audience here would beg to differ about the severity of drunk driving? I will tell you that Rich Mallow will be joining me here on the program a bit later. He is the New York State Executive Director of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. He has a very different opinion than Mayor de Blasio, the ultra-liberal mayor defending the sanctuary city status of New York by saying we will not send drunk drivers home. Hell, we might even throw a party for them. And while you're talking about sanctuary cities, you'll now need to include the city of Lansing, Michigan, your state capital. In a surprise move last night, near the end of the city council meeting, the 8-member council, along with Mayor Virge Bonaro's administration, agreed to draft a resolution that could be up for a vote in as little as 2 weeks. That's right, Lansing, Michigan, moving quickly to become a sanctuary city, because that clearly must be the number one priority in Michigan today, is for Lansing, Michigan to be a sanctuary city led, apparently, by Virge Bonaro and the city council in the city of Lansing. How's that make you feel? Is that the priority in Lansing? Because we must have all of the jobs taken care of. No unemployment in Lansing. Homelessness must have been taken care of while I wasn't around. Unemployment rates must have been taken care of. Our vets must be taken care of just perfectly well in the city of Lansing. Mayor Bonaro, is this really the best thing you've got in mind? And listen to this. At-large City Council member Kathy Dunbar made the motion, and she said, according to the Lansing State Journal, she doesn't care if a sanctuary city designation for Lansing means that President Trump's administration could take away up to $6.5 million in federal funding that the city gets annually. She said she doesn't care if $6.5 million headed for Lansing just goes away. Instead, she stressed the importance of protecting immigrants and refugees. I don't care about that $6 million because I don't think Trump is going to do it, said Dunbar. Unbelievable. You can direct your comments to the folks at Lansing City Hall, or you can contact me here, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Is Donald Trump doing the right thing? Do you support what Donald Trump is doing? Do you believe that he's following through on his promises to make America safe and make that a priority? 888-900-9966. What would you say to the mayor of Lansing, Michigan, Virgil Bonaro, and city council members? And city council members who say it's time for Lansing to be a sanctuary city. What do you make of it? 888-900-9966. Seth Callis, a member of the Lansing chapter of BAM, by any means necessary, by the way, BAM, said the group plans to attend meetings until the council passes the resolution. We have a really concrete goal of making Lansing a declared sanctuary city, deliberate cooperation with the federal immigration authorities. Let's take Rick checking in from Pinckney. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm with this announcement, I'm going to be calling my Senator Joe Hune, and I'm going to be calling my state representative,
whatever Biden. It may be. Go on.
Yeah, I'm going to be calling them, and telling them that, hey, we need to take action in our state. We need to cut off state funding to the city of Lansing, too. I know it's our state capital, but they need to stop funding the city. I mean, that money should not go to them.
$6.5 million in federal funds.
City, they can be sovereign and on their own.
Yeah, well, here's what I concern myself with. The people that in Lansing that don't have enough to eat this morning. The people that are veterans that don't have a place to stay tonight. What about the people that, you know, don't have a job? Our priorities are taking care of people that don't even exist except in theory at this point. Refugees that may come here at some point so that we can protect them. It's absurd, Rick. Thanks for checking in. The hotline number is 888-900-9966. I'll take your thoughts throughout the rest of the day. Frank Vernuccio joining us next from the New York Analysis of Policy and Government. We'll talk about the drunk driving being a very minor offense, according to Liberal Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City. Maybe he should raise the legal limit for drunk driving in New York. Maybe that would help things out, eh? Back in a moment.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
I refuse the love you had for me. I refuse the love a little
bit. All right. Welcome back to it. My next guest, Frank Vernuccio, regular contributor. Because he gets up at this hour when too many people just can't drag themselves out of bed. Frank's ready for action. Frank Vernuccio, Editor-in-Chief, New York Analysis of Policy and Government. Welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you.
Yeah, you're into full contact at an early hour, which I greatly appreciate. let's start with Sally Yates. Talk about full contact. Boom, you're gone.
Look, the reality of it is this administration is doing more in the first couple of days than most presidents do in an entire administration. That means there's a lot of criticism that's going to come down the pike.
Well, I greatly appreciate it. I want to just focus on several things that are going on. I mean, there's so much going on, it's hard to keep up with, but I want to talk about, okay, so she's gone. Barack Obama breaks precedent and protocol and comes out and starts criticizing President Trump 10 days after he left office. It's unheard of in my life. In fact, I have to go back three generations to find anything even remotely comparable.
You know, the fact of the matter is the level of criticism that this president has been receiving is unprecedented in U.S. history. The combination of factors, whether we're looking at the Black Lives Matter movement, which not only protested in a very serious way in Washington, whether it's the fact that they've marched in California saying kill white people, whether it's the folks who are burning American flags in cities around the country, whether it's the news media, which is in many cases simply furious that their chosen candidate lost the election, we are seeing something that goes beyond a protest movement, that goes beyond merely expressing freedom of thought. We're seeing something that is in its concerted and financed attempt to overturn the results of the 2016 election. This goes beyond politics. It is indeed close to a rebellion. When you have, for example, in the state of California, talking about ways to either secede or to suspend payments owed to the federal government, that's something far beyond anything we've seen before. Indeed, the only indicia we can see, or the only similarity we can see, is something in the past is firing on Fort Sumter after the election of Abraham Lincoln.
I think that California should not secede. I think it should be split in half so that the people of California are more appropriately represented, because a large millions of people in California are not represented at all by the people that run that state. That's a fact. By the way, there are something on the order of 73 sitting, 16 senators, 57 House members, all Democrats, who supported this kind of executive order that Donald Trump put forth when their party was in power, and now that it is not, they scream bigotry, they scream xenophobia, they scream all these things. How completely disingenuous. They're liars.
Well, how come these folks are really the folks who are criticizing President Trump said nothing about that President Obama had the worst record in terms of appearances before the Supreme Court than any president in modern history? Where was the media then? Where were these protesters who were claiming they're worried about the rights of individuals? Where were they during the entire 8 years of the Obama administration?
I was asked last night during an appearance on Newsnight on the BBC if people where I live are supporting Donald Trump, even though he's doing all of these things. Of course, the BBC wildly left on many things. I said, not only are they supporting him, I believe if the election were held today, 10 days after he's been in office, he would win more votes than he did originally. And I believe that from the heart of this nation, seeing a politician doing exactly what he said he was going to do, people that are looking out for America first and his safety. And this is not a ban on refugees. It's certainly not a ban on being Muslim, because the largest Muslim nation, Indonesia, isn't affected. The nation with the second largest amount of Muslims, that being India, isn't affected. Pakistan isn't affected. So it's nonsense to call it a Muslim ban, and it's for 120 days. Syria has a different circumstance because their paperwork is even more difficult to figure out, so it could take them a bit longer. But it's certainly not permanent. It's a temporary ban, and it's looking out for the best interest of America. And I believe because of that, Frank, that Donald Trump would do better today in an election than he did in November.
In terms of that ban, let's look at some of the numbers. The population of Muslims throughout the world, 1.7 billion. The numbers of Muslim majority countries, 50. Those countries that are actually affected by the ban, 7. 7 out of the 50. Total population affected, 212.8 million out of a population of 1.7 billion. Those are trivial numbers compared to the totals.
Trivial. Here's a comment from one of the listeners that just came in moments ago. Not taking in Syrian refugees and closing our borders isn't mean or heartless. I lock the doors of my house each night. I don't lock them because I hate the people outside my house. I lock my doors because I love the people inside my house. How perfect is that?
It is. Your listener has an extraordinary gift for summarizing the whole thing just in a nutshell. Look, this is absolute nonsense. The protest here, simply doesn't deal with reality whatsoever. Oh, by the way, the fact that 8 U.S. Code, I believe it's 1182, gives the president this authority. What we saw in the past certainly supersedes or certainly overwhelms anything that President Trump has done so far. Can anyone forget the fact that President Carter, at the end of the 1970s, threw Iranian students out of the United States?
They don't even know that, Frank. That's the thing. They don't even know that 50,000 Iranian students were ordered to come and show up with their papers. Now, does that sound a little bit Nazi-esque? A little bit, eh? Show up with your papers. We have ways to make you talk. Bring your papers. And if you didn't have your papers in order, you were tossed. Nobody talks about that. Go on.
Nor does anyone talking, by the way, about the fact that President Obama actually outlined these countries and did something very similar as well. No one seems to want to talk about this, which, by the way, all goes to this point that it is no longer simply a protest. It's a concerted effort on the part of the media and a part of very well-financed leftist organizations to overturn the results of the 2016 election.
Well, it's not going to get overturned, and in fact, like I said, people are applauding this president for doing exactly what he said. He needs to remain steadfast, and he needs to remain on course at this point. And if the Democrats think they can stand in his way and stop it from happening, they've got a rude awakening coming. For example, tonight, the president is likely to name his nominee to replace Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court. Democrats say they won't even take a vote on it. I can assure you, if they take that tact and that seat remains unfilled in 2018... there's going to be a sea change in the Senate that'll see them in a minority they will never soon recognize, right or wrong.
Absolutely right. There's one other factor, and you just brought it up by that example. In many ways, these protests are not necessarily directed exclusively at Donald Trump. In many ways, they are part of what is starting to be a civil war for the Democrat Party leadership. The Democrat Party of Harry Truman or John F. Kennedy no longer exists. Particularly when we're talking about putting someone like Keith Ellison in charge of the DNC, the Democratic
who embraced Louis Farrakhan, a guy that I can lovingly call a kook. I mean, seriously, Louis Farrakhan is a kook. There's no other good word for him, and he was supported by this candidate.
That's exactly right. And in fact, if Keith Ellison does get that position, we're going to have to see a real split within the Democratic Party. These folks who are doing the most vehement of the protesting,
yes,
in many ways are the ones who want to make sure the Democrat Party no longer exists in the format that we knew.
Well,
it
I can tell you this, the Democratic Party of John Kennedy doesn't exist. Frank, I have to run. Always a pleasure. Glad you get up to do this with us. You're wonderful. Thank you.
Great being with you. Look forward to our next discussion.
All right, Frank Vernuccio there. I think it's a civil war for Western values and Western civilization, more accurately. Back after this.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
All right, well, maybe one of the most anticipated Supreme Court picks, in my lifetime, could come tonight, according to Donald Trump. My next guest, I've been looking towards this. It's going to be an important moment, to say the least. Dr. John Lott, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center here, which you can find at crimeresearch.org. Doctor, welcome back to the program.
Great to talk to you.
Critical pick, but it looks like it's a free, nearly full-on civil war with the left 10 days into Donald Trump's presidency. I wonder if anybody will even get a chance to get a confirmation vote or hearing. What do you think?
Well, I guess a number of Democrats are threatening on filibustering the nomination. I mean, who knows whether the Senate will change the rules on filibusters. It's too bad that we've kind of lost a lot of these rules in the Senate over the last few years to lose more. But, you know, it's I think there'll eventually be a vote. You know, one thing that the president has, he can always make a recess appointment. And since the Republicans control the Senate and the House, they can, you know, on vacation times, they can go and put the Senate in recess. It's one of the things that traditionally has been prevented from being done when the opposition party controls the Senate. They'll just have the Senate convene every other day or so, even though the rest of the senators are not around town, in order to prevent recess appointments. But since the Republicans control that, at the very least, you know, he's not going to do that right away, but he can do that, you know, maybe in a couple months.
All right. So clearly, one of the things that is—I don't like to call it a litmus test, but I guess it's a test of your thoughts and so forth—is how people come down on the Second Amendment. It's been a critical reason for the selection of the Supreme Court justice that'll be put forth tonight. And during all of this, your organization, the CPRC, has done some original research and found that all but one of the 20 worst mass public shootings, 45 of the worst out of 50 in the world, occurred outside of the United States, like the one that we heard about a couple of days ago at a mosque in Quebec City. These all happen in places outside of America. Tell me about your study.
Right. Well, we looked at the 50 worst mass public shootings around the world, not including ones over, you know, battles over sovereignty. So Chechen rebels killing 383 people at a school in Russia is not included because they were fighting over trying to get sovereignty for Chechnya. But, you know, it's amazing how many really horribly gruesome attacks that you see around the world that just don't get news coverage in the United States, even in Europe. You know, you go back to 1970 and people forget all the Beiner Meinhof gangs and other attacks in Europe during the 70s and 80s, where people would take machine guns into nightclubs or into airports and kill people. But, you know, you compare the United States to Europe or to the rest of the world, and the vast majority of the world is much more dangerous in terms of mass public shootings than the United States is.
But why is it then that the mass media, when it comes to mass shootings in America and even overseas, other outlets, Sky News, BBC, pick your poison, they take shots at America all the time? Is this as if America is some sort of cartoon-esque Wild West that they make it out to be? It's strange to me. Why do they do that?
Because I think it fits a template in what their political agenda is. They want to make the United States, which has relatively high gun ownership, appear to be a place where there's tremendous violence. Of course, you and I have talked about the fact that things like concealed carry, allowing people to own guns to protect themselves, is a very important way of stopping terrorist attacks. You know, if you only have people with, you know, in uniform, it's kind of like putting people out there with a neon sign over their head that says, shoot me first. The fact that they're concealed carry permit holders make it riskier for these terrorists to go engage in their attacks. It also makes it safer for the armed police that you have in uniform to be able to, you know, not have an attack against them. When the terrorist starts firing at an armed police officer, they reveal their position and make it possible that so that a concealed carry permit holder who is behind them or to the side or to the front is going to be able to respond and stop them. You know, one of the amazing things, I just had a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week where, you know, you look at Europe, and the vast majority of European countries, EU countries, won't allow off-duty police officers to be able to go and carry guns for protection. The big concert killing where 89 people were killed in Paris at a rock concert in November 2015, there were eight off-duty police officers who were present at that concert, and yet none of them had a gun with them because they were obeying French law that forbade off-duty police officers to carry.
Even off-duty police officers. No way to defend yourself. No way to do the right thing in case of emergency, and that's unbelievable. But you know what? I know what's going to happen here. We're on the phone with Dr. John Lott today, and this study that shows 45 of the worst mass killings occurred outside the United States, 45 out of 50, you'll get discredited in the mainstream media. They'll take shots at you. They'll tell you that it has no basis in reality and so on and so forth. They'll try to tear you down. You deal with that a lot, I guess. I'm going to give you 30 seconds for the last word.
Well, what we try to do, whether it's in my book, The War on Guns, or whether it's the post that we put up on our website, is to give the specific cases. People can go and look them up and check them themselves to see whether or not they're true or not. And, you know, it's very easy for people to find the cases in the United States. What's much harder and takes a lot of work is to go and find these cases around the world. And people miss them. The news media misses them. But if I provide the actual cases, the date, where they occurred, you know, if people want to disagree, it's easy enough for them to go and check.
There you go. Dr. John Lott. Always a great conversation. You can find out more at crimeresearch.org. Check out his new book, The War on Guns, and so much more. Doctor, thank you for the conversation.
Great talking to you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back. The hotline, 888-900-9966.